Being an educator in today's world means you could face a life-threatening situation at some point in your career. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Earlier today on WLRN, we heard from a group of students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High. 17 of their classmates and school staff members were shot to death last week. We heard their pleas for lawmakers to do something about guns. Today on Sundial, we'll hear from teachers, because one sad reality of these mass shootings is that the victims are often teachers too, people who risked or gave their own lives to protect the children. How has the profession changed, considering in some cases, teachers, coaches, administrators, and school guards sometimes have to become first responders? If you're a teacher or a former teacher, we want to hear your thoughts today. First, we're going to hear from Democratic Congressman Ted Deutsch of District 22, which includes Parkland. All of that on Sundial today. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, the funerals have begun for the 17 people killed last week at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, with more to come in the days ahead. We're going to speak now to the U.S. representative from the district that includes Parkland, Ted Deutsch. Congressman Deutsch, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
What have you been hearing over the weekend since the shooting? What have you been hearing from your constituents?
Well, I've been hearing incredible stories about what happened in Stoneman Douglas High School, the heroism of Mr. Beagle and the student who was shot in the legs and crawled over to the door and was able to lock the door and keep the shooter out before he was shot a few more times. Fortunately, he's still living. Tales of heroism by the teachers and students. Obviously, there's an enormous amount of grief. This is such a horrific experience for the whole community, but there's also been remarkable resolve by the families who lost loved ones and by the students especially who are committed to taking this tragedy and using it to help make change so that no one should ever have to experience this anywhere else again.
And we heard from some of those students actually this morning. Tom Hudson spoke with some of the students who have been at the forefront of this. And I'm wondering, have you met with any of these students?
Sure, I've met with them pretty regularly. I'm actually on my way now to a meeting with these students. They are sadly, because of what they've experienced, they've now aged well beyond their years, and that's affecting the way that they go about what for them is a vitally important mission. Between the march on Washington that they're planning, the trips that they're planning to Washington, the eloquence and power with which they address the media, these young adults are having an enormous impact now, and they are going to make a difference in the debate both in Tallahassee and in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, that it's terrible to have to say that there have been so many school shootings in the U.S. in the year since Columbine, and very little has changed in terms of gun laws. Do you think the involvement of these students is going to make a difference?
I absolutely do. Look, these kids are part of the active shooter generation. These are kids who started with active shooter training and drills from the time that they entered kindergarten. And yet, here they are in high school, these shootings are still, with all of the warnings, still taking place. Nothing's been done. Semi-automatic assault rifles continue to flood the streets of our country, and they want to do something about it. And yeah, there have been 150,000 kids from around the country, students, who have been impacted in 170 schools that have experienced some kind of shooting on campus. These kids will lead that movement that will bring about the change. And they're not sitting back and letting it happen slowly. They're demanding that it happen right now.
Now, you're bringing a bill to establish a minimum age of 21 to buy a firearm. Do you think it could get to the floor? Do you think that it has any chance?
Yeah, look, let me start by saying I don't understand why an AR-15, why assault rifles are legal. They were illegal until 2004. We ought to reinstate the assault weapons ban. But that's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of political muscle that these kids are going to bring. But this bill that we're introducing is pretty straight. It's pretty much common sense. If you have to be 21 in this country to buy a beer, you got to be 21 to buy a handgun, then certainly you should have to be 21 in order to buy any kind of firearm, instead of being able to walk into a gun store at the age of 18, 19, 20 and walk out with one of these weapons of war.
Are there any viable proposals in the House to expand gun safety at all right now besides what you're trying to bring?
Of course. Of course, there are. There's a universal background check proposal that has wide support among the American population generally, including gun owners. There's a piece of legislation that would say if you're too dangerous to get on an airplane because you're on the terror watch list, then you sure as heck shouldn't be able to buy a gun. Those pieces of legislation are sitting there. The problem is not that there aren't bills. The problem is that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell simply refuse to bring them to the House floor for a vote. And that's because of the power that these gun companies continue to wield. But that power, I am convinced, is not nearly as strong as the power of these young people.
You know, you think about the fact that two of your colleagues in the House have been shot in recent years. Even a bipartisan proposal for a ban on bump stocks failed a few months ago, devices that simulate the automatic firing. What is realistically possible in the House?
Well, look, I think the three bills that we've talked about, the no-fly, no-buy background checks and 21 to buy a gun, those are very straightforward. The bump stock bill, again, even my Republican colleagues acknowledge that we should get rid of this device, make it illegal to own this device that converts a semi-automatic rifle into a fully automatic killing machine. And then they got cold feet when they got pressured by the gun lobby and decided that they would punt on that too. Those four measures are not controversial. They have nothing to do with anyone's Second Amendment rights. They would help keep our communities safer. Not enough. We need to do more. But those four things we should move forward on right now. I think there is increasing pressure to do it.
House Speaker Paul Ryan was in South Florida over the weekend. You invited him to accompany you to Stoneman Douglas High School. Did he respond?
He didn't respond. I invited him to accompany me on what would have been a convenient trip for him, since he was at a fundraiser in Miami and was on his way to the president's resort in Mar-a-Lago. It certainly seemed that along the way he might want to stop and come to the school that had just experienced this horrific mass shooting, but no, I didn't get a response.
The president sent out a tweet this weekend tying the FBI's failure to respond to tips about the shooter to its focus on the Russia investigation. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are not nearly as important as the conversation I had with a gentleman whose child was killed. I visited with him for a while last night, and he was very clear that the President of the United States does not have his permission, nor, I would guess, the permission of any of the other families who lost loved ones at Stoneman Douglas to try to divert the conversation for his own political gain. And I think the President it was outrageous that he did it. It was obscene that he did it, and I think he owes these families an apology.
Again, I'm talking with Democratic U.S. Representative Ted Deutsch. His district includes Parkland, where the mass shooting took place last Wednesday. Congressman, a number of states are considering legislation that would allow a temporary restraining order to prevent at-risk people from getting access to guns. Could that have a future on a federal level?
Yeah, we've been talking about gun legislation specifically, but something that there are a whole series of things that we can do to make sure that we keep guns out of the hands of people who could harm others. And look, we know that the shooter at Stoneman Douglas has a long history. The officials came out to visit 39 times, I think, was the figure. Certainly, there were warning signs. There were warning signs on social media. So when you have those kinds of warning signs, we've got to find ways to identify them and then take action to ensure that people can't get their hands on guns. Yeah, that's one of the ways. There are a whole series of others.
Why is it so hard to get new gun legislation right now?
Well, look, I'll be honest with you. The conversation tends to be the same thing every time, right? The conversation is that something terrible, there's a horrific mass shooting, and some people then send their thoughts and prayers and don't really want to do anything beyond that. Others will get really engaged in the debate, and then time moves on. The gun lobby bullies people into submission, and that's it. But that's not going to happen this time. As we said before, it feels different this time because I honestly believe that it is different. I'm sitting outside about to go into a meeting with these students, and one of them is sitting out here on the phone, no doubt talking to some press outlet somewhere in America or around the world, getting out this message that this is a movement for these young people, as it should be for all of us, but for these young people especially, this is their opportunity to drive the debate, and it's going to lead to a place that recognizes that this is not a gun issue, it's a public safety issue, and that we owe it to our kids to do everything we can to help them go to school in a safe environment, free from the fear of gunfire.
He is U.S. Representative, Democratic U.S. Representative Ted Deutsch of District 22, which includes Parkland, Florida. Congressman Deutsch, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Still to come, earlier this morning, Tom Hudson spoke with some of the students from Stoneman Douglas High School. Next, we want to talk to teachers from across South Florida about their response to everything that's happened and what we need to do next. And we want to hear from you, especially if you're an educator or former educator. 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. More Sundial coming up here on WLRN. Hello and welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks again so much for listening. Well, it's been 5 days since the tragedy in Parkland, Florida. Kids from Stoneman Douglas High School will not go back to school at least until next week. Information is still trickling out about the shooter and his background. Some lawmakers are either speaking out about gun laws or they're being attacked for their position on gun laws. Earlier today, we heard from a group of Stoneman Douglas students. Today on Sundial, we're going to hear from teachers. And we want to hear from you if you're a current or former teacher. How has teaching changed in the age of mass shootings? The number again, 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Joining me in studio now, Barbara Kinosh. She's a teacher. She actually was here on a teacher panel not too long ago. Barbara, great to have you back.
Thank you, Liz.
Also joining us from the studios in Key West is Casey Silbert Marks. Casey, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And I believe that we do have on the phones right now joining us as well. Another teacher is Sedesta Smith. Do I have you there?
Yes, you do.
And I hope that I said that correctly.
Close to it. Okay.
Seresta. Okay, thank you so much. And again, Barbara teaches at Mast High School here in Miami-Dade. Casey is an English teacher at Key West High School, and Seresta is a teacher at John A. Ferguson Senior High School. That's in Kendall. You know what? I mean, let me start with this. I want to go around to everybody. This isn't the first. You've been teaching for a while, all of you. So you've seen the news, you've seen the stories, but I wanted to get a sense of where you were, what was going on when you found out, and just your reaction at that point. Barbara, let me start with you.
Well, I was at school, and I was there after school grading papers. I turned on the radio, and I heard it, and it was like, no, it can't be. Wait, Broward, 17, you know, shot and killed, and it was just, I just was in disbelief until I went home, and then I saw it on the news, and I couldn't believe it.
Was there something different about this one, considering, again, you've seen the news, this has happened before?
You know, it's becoming too frequent, having it right in our backyard was really, really scary, because then, I mean, it's always been real. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you attend a concert, you know, going to work at a school, going in a mall, going on an airplane. You know, there's a part of you that, you know, you're concerned. And I'm definitely living in that age. But it was just unbelievable, because it was a beautiful school in a wonderful neighborhood. I mean, I'm not saying that other schools and in other places, this shouldn't happen in America. This shouldn't happen anywhere in the world.
All right, let me go over to Casey. Casey, again, joining us from the studios in Key West. Casey, what about you? Where were you at the time and just your thoughts on, you know, as the story was unfolding?
I was actually in the car on my way home after school, and I was on the phone with my mom, and she had asked me if I had, you know, heard on the news about the school shooting. And I could tell by her voice that it was there was something really strongly emotionally hitting her. And she was telling me the news as it was breaking. And as soon as I got home, you know, I just turned on the news and pretty much watched it the whole evening. It's just completely gut-wrenching, listening to all of the students and their parents and as everything was unfolding. I think as an educator, you also can't help but picture yourself, what would I be doing in that situation? And your heart goes out to everyone in that school.
And that is an interesting point that I want to get to eventually, is that, you know, I want to get a sense of what would you do, because teachers are trained. There are drills in schools. Everybody's actually trained on supposedly how to handle this sort of thing. But before we get to that point, let me go over to Seresta. Let me ask you real quickly, Seresta, where were you? And just again, your thoughts, your initial thoughts on what was happening.
Well, I was getting ready to leave John A. Ferguson High School. It was the end of the school day. But sadly, I was trying to prepare for a transportation arrangement to come up to Jacksonville, where I am now, because a young man, 31 years old, had lost his life via gun violence, unexplained, shot by an ex-sheriff, no explanation. And I was trying to get arrangements to get up here to attend his services. And I said, wow, all of a sudden popped up on my computer was the information on what was going on with the students at Douglas. And I couldn't believe it. I quickly got on the phone and asked one of my friends, have you seen anything? Turn on your TV right now, turn on CNN or something to get the information. And she started relaying the facts of what was going on with me. And I was just shocked, already shocked that I'm having to attend the funeral from gun violence. And then we have a bunch more people killed. At that time, we didn't know how many exactly, and all the details were just starting to unfold. But it was shocking.
I have another teacher joining us now. I want to bring her in. She's also been here before as well. Talia Montes de Oca, she is a teacher math department, a teacher in the math department at the Western High School in Broward County. Talia, welcome back. Let me get your reaction on what was happening. And this is, you're in Broward County, so I mean,
correct,
this is your district.
Yes, too close to home.
Tell me a little bit about how did you find out?
I actually had a club meeting that day, and my building was closed. A lot of my students were saying that they weren't allowed into the building. And one of my security personnel, she called me to let me know we had something going on across the street.
Dolly, hold on 1 second. I'm going to have to stop 1 second because there's something wrong with the phones. I'm going to try to get you reconnected. Excuse me. So hold on 1 second for me. Actually, there you are. I can hear you now. Go ahead.
We had something going on across the street that the news was there.
Okay. Let me stop. I apologize. It's just not coming through, so I'm going to see if I can't get that fixed for you. You know what? I'm going to just come back again, talking with educators, and I want to hear from you, if you are an educator, your thoughts on, you know, from your perspective, from the perspective of a teacher or an administrator at a school, you know, in the world of mass shootings. I mean, how do you deal with this? How do you handle this? And, you know, what is the best way to talk to your students, by the way? That's another thing, is are you talking to your students about mass shootings and the dangers and the risks? And how are they dealing with the mental health issues? You know, this cannot be easy for anybody, but how do you talk to the students about, you know, dealing with, you know, these dangers and, you know, how to discuss it amongst each other? We're going to get to the phones here in just a minute, but let me come back to my teachers just momentarily. Barbara, you get training. There are basically shooter scenario trainings at schools. Just give me, I've not been through one of these. This is way after my generation, but what does that entail exactly? What do you do?
Well, there's a certain protocol, and you are told, you know, code red. They have special codes. And then you're supposed to lock your door. You're supposed to have the children stay away from the windows, shut your lights off, and stay away from any kind of window, and you want to, protect them. And so we've had these drills. Unfortunately, we've been having them for years, or fortunately, I don't know, however you want to look at it. So we do have something, and let me tell you, I thought about it again. Okay, where am I going to put my kids? Because part of my classroom, half of it, are all windows on the ground level. I mean, even though it's on the second floor, there's a patio, and we have windows in the door as well. And when that teacher was shot through the window, it really, you know, it hit home. So I was thinking, okay, we could just move the furniture. We'll slide it over.
But you're told to stay in the room. Lock yourself up in the room, basically.
Yes.
At that point. Casey, you know, this happened here. It's happened in a lot of places, unfortunately. But the fact that it's happened here now in South Florida, what are you thinking about that training? And how often do you have, since the shooting last week, how often you thought about that scenario and what you would do?
Well, like Barbara was saying, I have a pretty much similar experience with lockdown drills. And in a previous school, we also had a lockdown drill where the police were engaged in a mock active shooting exercise. And I think that those exercises actually need to happen more regularly, because in my experience in the lockdown drills, you know, it's only a couple minutes, and you are trying to get the students to follow the directions and take it seriously, but, you know, they can't imagine it. They're just not there cognitively to be able to put themselves in that situation, so they kind of don't take it seriously. But the one time I was at the school with the mock active shooter, and you could hear the cap gun go off, I just looked in the eyes of my students, and, you know, they could actually they just seemed to get it in that moment, you know, that this could potentially be real. And you could see the fear in their eyes, and it's, you know, it's just heartbreaking.
Seresta Smith, you know, you think about, that's something interesting that, you know, what I just heard Casey say. And look, I kind of remember as a student, again, we didn't have these drills, but fire drills and some of the other things we did, and you just kind of laughed it off. You didn't take it seriously. What are you hearing from your students? What have you spoken to them? I'd imagine what Thursday, Friday, did you talk to them about the shooting? What are they saying?
Well, on Thursday, we did talk about the shooting. Friday, unfortunately, most of the students did not come to school. Those that did come left because of the continued threats that were being posted. So parents began to pick students up. Students left school early. Some just jumped the fence and left. So it's, they do not feel protected. First and foremost, what you hear from them is they do not feel protected at all. They're frustrated with current legislation. They're frustrated with the school design and setup because, Barbara's right, you've got a window in your classroom door. There's windows that line the whole of one of the walls in my classroom, easy access. So if you are trying to get the kids against the wall, they're still sitting ducks for anybody that actually views from outside. You can pull the screens down, but they can shoot through the glass. It's just that simple. So the kids' concern are that they're really not protected under these circumstances, and they are calling for more protection. I'm on one of those large campuses like Douglas. There are three main buildings. Each building has its own entryways and exits. What's going on in one building you may not know between the other two buildings, particularly if they pass this law that they're trying to pass now where they want silencers available to everyone. You would never know. So they do not feel protected at all, and they want to feel protected inside their school. And a lot of them now are brainstorming and coming up with their ideas how they can get protected.
Again, Seresta Smith, she teaches at John A. Ferguson Senior High School. I'm going to see if I can bring back in Talia Montes de Oca again from Western High School. Let me see if I've got the line set up this time that it works. Talia, are you there?
Yes.
All right. It doesn't sound like I've got that set up. I'm going to see if I can fix that for you. I apologize. We're going to go to the phones here in just a moment and talk a little bit about this. Talia, let me see if I got you now. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Talia, you had just 15 students
in your class
on Friday, right?
Yes.
Only 15 students. I mean, so did you hear from any parents? They don't want their kids in school right now.
I had a parent text me Thursday night about a picture that was going around, and our schools was one of the schools being threatened, and they were taking care of it. They found the person who was doing that, who did that picture, and the parent just did not feel safe. She picked up her child early on Thursday and did not have their child come to school on Friday.
What did you, what kind of things were you talking to your students about with the shooting? What sort of things were you discussing with them?
I discussed about social media and some of the things that they say as a group when they're around other students, that they may not feel that they're hurting somebody, and the person may joke around with them, but deep down it may hurt that person. And then after a while, that person may just kind of crack. So they have to be watchful of the things that they say and the things that they post on social media or being around other people. Their friends.
Social media has become a big issue on this one, without a doubt, on for good and bad. But I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to some of these callers. Again, the number 800-743-9576. Let me go to Mava, I believe. Is it Mava in Boca Raton?
Mava Galler.
Mava. Thank you so much. Mava, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. And I just want to send my condolences out to all the families and so forth that had to endure this horrific tragedy. But one of the things I wanted to say is that the first and foremost, there must be a change in legislation. You cannot do anything to move forward. You could talk about all the mock trials, all the shooting mock, you know, situations that you put forward, but you cannot do anything unless they change the legislation. That is the first thing they must do. And if they don't do that, we're going to have some serious issues. At the moment, I'm a teacher in China because I had the opportunity to go to China, and I felt at some point, I worked for the Broward County Schools, I worked at Western High School, and I also worked at Sunset High with the alternative school, and I just felt that there was something coming. I didn't know what, but I felt like it was a good reason for me to stop teaching in the Broward County Schools and take that opportunity to go to China, where they don't have shootings in the schools. They're not even allowed to have guns. Not that I'm promoting that, but I'm saying you have to do a better job at curbing, you know, the access of guns to kill children, you know, 21 and younger. It's unheard of that this child was able to purchase a gun with his mental illness, etc. And you have to instill the mental illness factor. That's so important. How was he able to do that? People are just turning a blind eye. We can't do that. We have to stand up for these students. We have to stand up for our kids, for our children. We have to do that now. This is the time. I worked with women in distress, and I would go to the schools, and I would have a program, maybe 45 minutes, to teach the kids what, you know, what domestic violence is. Some of the kids lived with domestic violence, didn't realize it. So we need to bring this this era forefront, so everyone is understanding what's going on, right, that we can curb it.
Mava, thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate the comments and the perspective, and again, a few other points to think about. It's not just a gun issue. There is a lot more going on here. Mava, thank you again for the call. We're going to take some more calls, more of your comments, and continue our conversation with the teachers that are joining us today. Again, just getting the teacher perspective, the educator's perspective, because sometimes they're the victims too. Some of the victims in Stoneman Douglas were educators, coaches. And as we've seen in past shootings, not just this one, they are putting their lives on the line to protect the children. Is that what people got into teaching for? To become first responders? Is that the world we live in today? We'll take more of your calls coming up next on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. So today's program, we're talking with educators, teachers throughout South Florida, because we want to hear their thoughts on the safety in schools, or maybe the lack of safety, after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. I mean, what is the conversation we should be having about making sure that our schools are safe? And hearing from teachers, not just about the training they have to undergo to prepare for this. This is so alien to me. I a child raised in the 80s, we had fire drills. That's the most we ever had to worry about, that there are shooter drills, and it's just the normal thing. What are those drills teaching us? Is it enough? And also just what should teachers be talking about with their students? How do you talk to the students after something like this to help them stay calm still feel somewhat safe. And of course, they have to continue on with their lives. We have to go back to work, back to school, etc. Let me go back to the phones. I want to go to Chris, who is joining us from Pompano Beach. Chris, you're a former teacher.
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I mean, just your thoughts on this conversation, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the more I listen to this conversation, you really realize how many different, you know, things are at play here. And there's just so many issues on the table that, I mean, it's going to take like an insurmountable effort to make progress on these issues that we have. But I do entrust the young students at Marjory Stoneman Douglas to really combat these issues and be on the forefront of change.
Chris, is it just a matter of tougher gun laws? Are the schools doing enough when it comes to the mental health issues? Or do we have to just make schools fortresses and make them safer?
I mean, that's the thing, you know, like Marjory Stoneman Douglas is a sprawling campus, you know, so there's no way to prevent, you know, someone who is determined to get on that campus, you know. So I've been hearing about this training that you've been talking about, and as a former Broward school teacher, I mean, I could definitely tell you that, you know, there's this active shooter training is definitely not what it's made out to be. I mean, the training is no more expensive than would be a fire drill. You know, I could assume that things are going to change moving forward, but the way they stand now and the way they've been, it wasn't that, you know, in depth.
Chris, my understanding, yeah. By the way, you were a former teacher at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, right?
No. I was a former student at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, so former teacher at Coconut Creek High.
I see. Okay, so, I mean, you know, look, it touched you a little bit harder than most since you know the school. And,
yeah.
You know, you were there. I mean, as the news is breaking and you're hearing all these stories, I mean, you know the layout, so you know what was going on.
Right.
I mean, what...
Yeah, I mean, you know, in seeing the pictures, I knew, you know, how it sort of transpired. I mean, that, you know, he obviously didn't go through the front of the school, you know, so I think we all understand that he went through the back in the senior parking lot, which is right near that freshman building, and, you know, that's where it all transpired. But I think, you know, the event is the event, but the issues are what's going to sort of live on, and that's what we need to combat and deal with, to be proactive. And, you know, this is not the first time this has happened. It was kind of sick in that, you know, I know a lot of my peers heard about this happening, and it seemed like the reaction was not as strong as you would think it would be. You know, it was almost like this is just business as usual. This is something that we're beginning to sort of expect. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, it could happen anywhere, and we realized that.
Chris, thank you so much for the call and, you know, for sharing your thoughts on this and you know, it giving you the chance to vent, because you definitely have to. We all have to on some level. Chris, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Let me turn back to my teachers here joining me on the program. And again, I have teachers from throughout South Florida with me. Barbara Kinash, let me start with you. Again, you teach at Mast High School. Chris sitting there saying that the training really not that useful, but I thought what was really interesting hearing from you and from Casey and from Seresta is that, you know, again, you're now thinking about what else you could do. The other thing I was curious about is this. Look, a coach lost his life. Teachers have lost their lives in this. Your thoughts on the fact that you're not just an educator. You're a first responder. You have to be. And you may have to shield these students and surrender your life. What are you thinking about when you think? Because you didn't get into teaching to do that.
No, but you do what you have to do. We had an incident. It wasn't an active shooter, but there was a police incident close to a school that I was at. And it was a code red. And I was out in the hallway.
And that's
my
code.
Planning
that's
time.
That's the code for shooter.
Yes. So I saw students out in the hallway. And I just reacted and started shoving them into classrooms, opening doors, telling them to lock, you know, the teachers that were in there to lock the doors. And you just do what you have to do. And a colleague and I, she was on her planning. We finally met afterwards. And we, like, looked at each other. We were totally exhausted. We're in a room now after the hall was all clean. But you do what you have to do. Now, I know we keep talking about guns and the violence, but I kept thinking, too, was how did we fail this young man? How do we fail? Because we're in education, and it's about educating, and it's that people business. And my nickname at school is Mama Q. And like you said, I'm not just an educator, but a lot of times I have to serve as the mom. I have to serve as that sounding board and being there for my kids. And when we have large classrooms, when we don't have enough social services, enough counselors to deal with all these things, that's a big issue. And social media. Social media, I'm telling you, because it's now becoming a stage for kids to use to kind of show things off. So, I mean, it has the good, but it has a lot of things that we have to look at.
As we found out very quickly, the shooter, the suspect in this case, had posted many photos on Instagram of himself with weapons. Casey Sublett Marks, talking about the social media aspect of it, one of the things that jumped out at me was, sadly, I've been covering this story since Columbine. And so one of the things is, I remember back then, there were a lot of clues. There were a lot of hints that there was something wrong. Granted, that was the late 90s. There was no internet. There was no Facebook. There was no Twitter. This was all discovered after the fact that these two young men had basically been writing down a lot of disturbing things and taking video of themselves out in the woods shooting guns and writing things that they wanted to do. Today, it seems like, or it would appear that it would be so much easier to see what something, what somebody's thinking and doing, because everybody's posting everything all the time. It's out there for everybody to see. Casey, I mean, do you think at some point maybe we have to start watching, or are we already watching what students are doing online? On social media?
Yes. The schools, at least to my knowledge, the SROs are somewhat monitoring social media use, but really we rely on the students to tell us of anything that they see that makes them feel troubled or makes them feel worried about anything. We have a see something, say something kind of policy in our district. And the kids are usually really good about bringing it to an adult's attention when something is going on social media. But, I mean, I'm certain that things slip through that crack. But really the problem is what happens when the kids do bring those concerns forward. The schools lack a lot of authority to really do anything about it. And sometimes you get pushback from parents and the community and whatnot. So I think we really need to enact some more school policies and law enforcement policies that can handle these situations.
Seresta Smith, let me ask you this question again. Seresta teaches at John A. Ferguson Senior High School. You know what? This is a student who had been expelled. Do we have to look at our detention and /expulsion, protocols and how we deal with students? I mean, do we just if a student is a problem in school, a danger to other students, is it just let's kick them out, or do we have to do something else?
Well, the irony is that Broward County probably followed the right steps in all of this. This child was serviced. Broward has been instrumental in implementing protocol and policy that is conducive to helping that child in regards to avoiding the school-to-prison pipeline. Well, now we have him. Where is he going, you know? But they instituted all of this, but they hit roadblocks when it comes to the law. If you're doing everything you can to put this child in the right facility, when it comes to the laws in terms of how they are set up, they could not arrest this kid. They could do nothing to this kid. They could not Baker Act this kid legally. They couldn't arrest him because at that point he had not committed a crime per se. He was saying things. He was making threats. But the way the system was set up, I know there was complaints about the FBI dropping the ball, but even if the FBI kept an eye on this student, they were going to hit a wall eventually in terms of, well, can we really go ahead and effect a full arrest, or can we actually go ahead and effect a Baker Act motion? So I think when you're looking at the support services, the laws have to work in combination with these support services. if they're not working in combination with them, you're asking for this situation to happen over and over and over again. You can look at the social media. You can report it. You can do everything. Like I said, Broward County Public Schools basically did things very well and right. But the roadblocks are there, and a lot of it comes from policy. And then when you have the federal government, you have them actually getting rid of policy that tried to impact the buying of weapons by people that have a history of mental disease. I mean, what do? You throw your hands up in the air. And the young lady, Miss, I think it was Gonzalez, I can't remember her name, that was very vocal this weekend at the rally, when she hollered BS, 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 that child was making a very good point. You're not working with us here. You're working against us more than anything else, these elected officials.
Yeah, let's.
And, of course, they're being controlled by the NRA, who is being pushed by the arms industry. When we look at who is ultimately creating the policy, it's the arm industry. They're making plenty of money.
Let me jump in. And talking about those students, because a group of them are going up to Tallahassee tomorrow. We're going to be following that story. And, of course, there are a lot of talks about walkouts and marches coming up a little later this spring. All right, we got to take a quick break. I'm going to come back and take a few more of your phone calls. Again, talking with educators about the Stoneman Douglas shooting. What should we do next? All of that coming up next on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. And I do want to mention, by the way, that if you didn't listen to the special program at 9 o'clock this morning with Tom Hudson, please listen to the rebroadcast coming up tonight at 7. He spoke with students of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and one of the more powerful conversations I've listened to, and really something to listen to these young people talking. They are speaking up and very eloquently about the issues. Again, we're going to follow the story of a number of them who are going up to Tallahassee tomorrow to approach lawmakers. Let me go to the phones. I've got some folks who've been waiting, and I appreciate your patience. I'm going to start with Holly in Sunrise. Holly, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Holly, thank you so much for waiting. Go ahead.
I'm a teacher in Broward County. My school is about 10 minutes from Parkland, so I'm right in the neighborhood. But just the things that our school went through on Wednesday afternoon, I always turn my radio on to WLRN at 3:15, right as my students have all left campus, and that's when I check in with the radio, and I heard the horrific news. So there were a lot of conversations Wednesday evening, and Thursday morning, our principal went on our morning news show and announced what had happened in just sort of a vague, I teach elementary, so kind of a vague but comforting tone that we are all here for you, etc. And there were a lot of very upset little children, ages 5 to 10, who really can't grasp what was going on. And then by Friday, we probably had 40% of our population was not at school, because I think it's just terribly upsetting for the little ones who don't quite understand. But we have been asked, have you been through the active shooter training? Have you been through the active shooter training numerous times over the last 3 months? And all of us that said no, we hadn't, we still haven't been through that training. We do other trainings where we have to take all of our children and shove them into a little closet and have them not speak and so forth. So we're semi-trained, but we have a front door that's opened with a one-person single point of entry that makes us all quite nervous, A, for her and for the rest of us inside. But something needs to be done. I talk about metal detectors like at airports a lot, because maybe that would help us if the shooter comes in through the front door. The rest of our campus is well locked and is behind gates, but I don't know, just my opinion on we need to do a lot more than what we're doing now. We're trying to make our children safe, and we teachers also don't feel very safe coming to work anymore, and it's just very sad. My heart goes out for all of the victims and families of this tragedy, and I appreciate y'all there bringing this topic up.
Well, Holly, thank you for your perspective and talking to young students. That hadn't thought of that yet. We're talking about high schoolers at this point. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. And as we wrap up here, let me come back to my teachers. For those of you who are on the line, my apologies, we're just out of time, but we'd love to, we want to hear your thoughts. So Find us on Facebook, WLRN Sundial, and please let us know your thoughts, your comments, or any questions you may have. We may be able to get some of those answers for you. We definitely will be covering this story for some time. But Barbara Kinesh, let me start with you. What's the conversation we should be having now? I mean, what should we be talking about? This, again, is not new. It's sadly become kind of typical. But what should we be discussing?
Well, I think this whole problem is like an onion, and we have many layers. I think we need to bring in our parent, teacher, student association. We need to equip parents understanding, that these computers and these devices and things like that, they need to be monitored. And maybe parents need to be trained on it, too, so that they can understand, you know, how the Instagram works and how does a child get another account like that. And monitoring and maybe even, you know, a warning. We have warnings on all kinds of things. We don't let a child operate a car until they've gone through training, have a license, they understand the rules, and they've gone through that testing. And I think we need to monitor what they're viewing. I served on the federal grand jury, and boy, what an eye opener that was to see that if your child goes on the internet and goes to different sites, and how that can make a total upheaval. And so I think in supporting parents, I think we got to start, you know, at the very beginning. We have a lot of single parents out there that don't know what to do when they have a child who's in distress or a behavior issue, and we need that support.
Casey Sublett-Marks joining us from the Key West studios. Casey, what is the conversation that we should be having with parents? I mean, right after this happens, I'd imagine everybody's open to discussion, but, you know, how do you keep that conversation going?
Well, I agree with Barbara on a lot of the points that she just brought up. Parents nowadays, they struggle with being a parent instead of a friend, and looking out for those kind of signals that we as educators and psychologists and law enforcement are trained to already look out for. So maybe some parent training would be really beneficial to bring into our schools. But I also think that you could put all of the prevention in the world, but there's just so many factors involved in a situation like this. We need real gun control that makes sense, that reflects values that we say that we uphold, and we need quality, accessible, and affordable mental health care, and we need just so much more. There's just too much to this pie.
Let me go over to Seresta Smith again from John A. Ferguson Senior High School. Seresta, you know, one of the things I find fascinating, and real briefly because I'm running out of time, but the students are really speaking up on this, and I'm just curious as to the conversations you have with your students. Do you see that they're standing up now? They're not just falling back and waiting for this to pass. I don't know if I still have her there. I may have lost her. We'll see if we can. If not, let me go over to Dalia Montes de Oca. Thank you again for joining us today. Let me ask you that question. I mean, again, Dalia, in this case, it seems like students are, they're speaking up. They're you know, making their voices heard on this case. Do you get a sense that this generation, this group of kids today, maybe they're finally going to do something, not just, you know, take it passively?
I think they are. There's rumors of my students have sent me that there's a protest that students are going to do on Wednesday at 12 o'clock. They're all going to meet at one certain location at the school. So that's what their plans are. But I think some students may know what's going on. Others, I think, may just want to protest just to get out of class. So some of them may know what they're doing. Others are not. But I think...
Okay. And look, it's something that we're going to continue to follow and see what they're doing. I apologize. I ran out of time. Dalia Montes de Oca, again, teaches at Western High School. Seresta Smith, we had earlier from Johnny Ferguson Senior High School. Casey Sublett-Marks, again, teaches at Key West High School. And Barbara Kinesh teaches at Mass High School. I really appreciate all your time. Again, find us online on Twitter at WLRN Sundial or on Facebook, WLRN Sundial. And again, we'll be back talking about this tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening.